It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we were here, are here today, again, live on this, what seems like an endless series of absolutely beautiful summer days so far, or spring days, I guess I should say, since it's not official yet. But man, have we been enjoying the outdoors these days? You know, it'll get warm and humid soon, but enjoy it while it lasts, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, first off, let's start just by welcoming everybody back. If you're a regular, we appreciate it all the time because that's why we keep coming up. But if you're new to the show, whether you just discovered it or by accident or somebody told you or whatever, and you wanted to check it out, try to stick around for the whole hour. We'll promise you that you'll learn something sometime during that hour because it just always happens. There's nobody unaffected by what we talk about here, which is your money. And there's a lot to talk about. And that's a pretty good lead into saying there's a lot more money after last week, too.
There is. It was a very good week. The debt ceiling debate finally ended, just like we said it would. After
step by step, inch by inch, yeah, we told the story last week.
It took a lot of posturing by both sides of the aisle to get that done. Just really ridiculous. It was so clear it was going to pass, but the media was just, I mean, they were making it sound like it was a razor's edge vote in the House. And
well, they had to make darn sure they credited the Democrats with it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, no doubt.
Which, there's a lot of Republicans that would say, let them take the credit.
Well, I don't know. When you have one-third of D.C., and you get a deal like that done, is it going to be exactly what you want? No. But the fact that they did rein in some frivolous spending, and it was a pretty good deal for the Republicans, I thought. I
love it. Everybody whines that Washington won't work together and we can't compromise. So then they throw something together that both sides vote for, and they complain
that it isn't exactly what either exactly side wanted. Yeah, go figure. But that's politics.
Who's
for
more
you
juvenile, the people making the laws or the people voting them in?
I can tell you who was pleased by this development, and it was the market.
Yeah.
It jumped over 2% on all three indexes in the two trading days of June already. So we're off to a really good start in June.
Yep.
One nice thing about the two-day rally is in June is that it's not just a few big names participating, as it has been in May. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but energy, financials, industrials, and materials all are up more than 3% in June after falling more than that in May.
So, and it's the third.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just incredible.
Yep. For the week, the S&P was up 1.8%. The NASDAQ and Dow were both up 2%. The Dow had a good week, but it still lags behind the other indexes. For the year, it's up just 1.9%. The S&P is up 11.5%, while the NASDAQ is up a pretty astonishing 26.5%. That is the inverse of last year when the Dow was down 8.8%, the S&P down 19.4%, and the NASDAQ was down 33.1%. Now, realize those numbers are not one for one. When you fall 33%, it's not a 33% increase that gets you back to even. It is much larger than that. So just keep that in mind as you're looking at the results this year. It has been good, but we have not made up everything that we lost last year. Not even really close. It was some closer than we were, but not close.
Actually, the S&P is sneaking a peak at new highs forever.
52-week
highs. To go back to bull market highs.
Yeah.
We're trying to erase.
I was just about to say that the S&P fell just short of entering a new bull market this week. It was so close. It's up 19.7% since the low on October 12th of 2022. That was 233 days ago. And just 11 points are needed for the new bull market to be made official. We could easily see that next week.
Easily could.
International stocks didn't have quite as good of a week as the U.S., but they were still generally up. VXUS, the all world except U.S. ETF, managed a 1.1% gain. EEM, the emerging markets ETF, was up 1.4%. Japan had another great week, adding 2.9% to its recent streak. Another country that had a great week was South Korea, gained 3.3%. Brazil, which has also been going on a little run for reasons we cannot figure out, it gained 2% during the week to go up 9% this year. And then Mexico, which has been on a real streak, actually cooled off a bit, lost 1%. It's still up over 22% this year. And Israel was the worst performer that I could find, down almost 2%. May was not a great month for stocks. Even if the indexes were up a bit, everything outside of the 10 largest stocks was pretty much either flat or down. Energy stocks, dividend stocks, small caps, mid caps, they all fell dramatically in May. Don't be surprised if your portfolio was down in May. It really was not as good as the indexes kind of made it look. And that happens sometimes. The largest 10 stocks in the S&P were up 9.1% in May, while the rest of the S&P was down 4.1%. So if you look at the other 490 stocks, down 4.1%. Pretty amazing, astonishing difference between the top 10 and the rest of the pack. June has been a totally different picture, though, with the rally really spanning all sectors. So if you were down in May, you probably saw a little jump in the last 2 days. Part of the rally we saw this week was on the back of the jobs report released Friday morning. Once again, it showed a stronger than expected headline number of 339,000 jobs, with upward revisions to prior months of 93,000 jobs. So that put the total increase well over 400,000. The household survey showed a completely different result, with a loss of 310,000 jobs. Interesting dichotomy between those two numbers.
Yeah, you could say they're lying. Or you could try to explain it. And it seems to be, the difference seems to be in the number of self-employed people.
Well, I don't see what the benefit to them of lying about it would be.
They're not trying to get anything right now.
No, and actually, it may be better to have a worse jobs report to stop hiking inflation. So I don't see the benefit of saying,
I was disappointed.
Look how
it was. When I saw the headline number, I was disappointed.
That it was too high.
Yeah,
me too.
But then after reading about the household survey and seeing that it's down 300 and the birth-death adjustment was 231, it's not that strong out there. As I say, it's mostly in the self-employed and that kind of thing that the discrepancy lies.
Yeah, it's not terrible out there, but it's not great. It's not what it was a year ago, for sure. The unemployment rate also jumped from 3.4 to 3.7%. The labor force participation rate stayed the same at 62.6%. Technology and manufacturing were the only areas to see employment fall in May, while healthcare and social assistance, professional and business services, government, and leisure and hospitality gained the most jobs. It's interesting to see that the job losses in the technology sector really haven't bled over anywhere else.
Not really. It's definitely shifting income down, however. On an individual basis, if you aggregate everything, the jobs that are being lost generally pay higher than the jobs that are being gained.
Well, the top one was healthcare.
Yeah,
so
that's usually pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any problem. You see it in retail sales, and it's that pesky old inflation rate that keeps popping up. It's okay out there.
Yeah.
It's not great. It's okay.
No, definitely not great.
All right, well, we'll talk a little bit more about this and then get on to some other subjects right after we take a quick break. So don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And we have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 636-7888 right here in the 904. All right, everybody knows that the way you create wealth over time as an investor is by primarily, not exclusively, the U.S. stock market, because our country has prospered, our market has prospered, and our business people are the best. So I look back, way back in 1965, the S&P has performed since then at a rate that most people will find astounding. It has gained 24,708%. That's a number that's kind of difficult to wrap your brain around. But why 1965? Well, that's when Warren Buffett started Berkshire Hathaway. And over those same years, he has outperformed the S&P over time by how many times? 2, 4, 5? It's just a number. And It's just think success before you answer that, because we all know he's had it. He's always in the top, what, 5 or 6 richest people in the world.
Oh yeah, he's up there.
Yeah. So how many times better than the S&P has Berkshire Hathaway done since 65? There it is. All right, what else? Anything you want to mention? Anything else on the market itself?
The only other thing was the JOLTS report kind of confirmed what the jobs report said, that the overall picture is weakening, but it's still not bad. It's not like jobs aren't available. They certainly are. The JOLTS number actually ticked up over 10 million again. But the trends of layoffs and discharges, hiring, quits, and job openings are all headed in the wrong direction. And they've been that way for about 6 months now. So we've clearly seen the peak of the job market. It's just it's a matter of figuring out how far it's going to drop now.
Yeah, and no discussion of this nature should ever leave out, what will the Fed do in June?
I have no idea. I really do not.
That's a definitive, I don't know.
Let me, I'm going to look up what the CME Fed tool is predicting, because that is sort of what the Fed goes by.
Yeah, there has been a zero rate increase philosophy out there until a couple things like the jobs report and the inflation report that ticked up just a little bit when it shouldn't have. But the trend, if you look at the trend on any chart or any measure at all of, in particular, commodity pricing, you see that inflation is settling down. Now, unlike the stock market, inflation doesn't come down in a big old tumble. The old expression is that the market takes the stairs up and the elevator down. That's not true with inflation. It takes the stairs up and then it just sort of glides gently back to earth.
It's true. The market is pricing in a 75% chance of no rate hike and a 25% chance of a 25 basis point rate hike.
I don't think that's unrealistic.
No, I feel like that's pretty accurate.
They could justify it, but I don't think they have to.
I don't see the need for one in June. I think that they could make up for it if it was needed at the next meeting and not really hurt themselves.
In 6 week intervals, as we've talked about this endlessly on the show, 6 week intervals at which they meet, that's not enough to really see what your policy decision from last time has done.
That's right.
You're living on a policy decision that was maybe 12 or 18 weeks ago or even longer, perhaps, when the big jumps were coming through. So I think it's very wise of them if they decide to just kick back and see a little bit, and that we might all be rewarded for that. And again, the stumbling block, as always, is energy, which started to really crash this week. But what happened all of a sudden? Boom, boom, the last 2 days. And now oil got up almost 72 again by the close on Friday, having been 67.
Yep.
And believe me, there's a big difference in those numbers because it'll turn the price of gasoline around. As goes gasoline, so go consumers and such. So it's no easier to predict than anything else this year. We have been admittedly flummoxed for as long as I can remember now in terms of Saturday shows. So we'll see.
We will.
Not much else to say about that, I guess.
No, the another thing that moved quite a bit over the last, 4 weeks or so is rates, Treasury note rates. They've been all over the place.
That's the truth.
The 1 month note got up as high as I saw it over 6. I read it was 5.5, but I could have bought some at 6.
Yeah, that was a flash or something.
Yeah, it was.
Could have had it if you're.
Yeah, but it was such short term paper. It just didn't really move the needle. But
don't want to be buying every day or every other day.
Right, but that's come way down back in the 5% range now. So, kind of a spike there when the debt negotiations were going on.
I think that's kind of a comfort zone, the 4 to 6% interest rates. I know it isn't if you're a home buyer looking to become a first one, even especially, But when you go out and you're all of a sudden facing 6% mortgages.
Seven. It's almost seven now.
Seven, yeah. If your credit rating is less than perfect, then, of course, you've got the stupidity of Washington, D.C., where if you need a little helping hand, you better go in there with a bad credit rating. So we can help pay for it. But they swear they're not taking it from the rich and giving it to the poor either.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You can call it whatever you want to call it, but it doesn't alter the truth. But I kind of like the 5% range on things like treasuries because it does provide a viable alternative for our clientele who wants to keep some money safe.
Yeah.
But doesn't want to get 0.1 for that money anymore. They're sick of that.
It certainly makes for a much better performance on the 60-40 portfolio or really any mixture when you're getting the 40% at 5% return instead of 0.1 or last year negative 13 on the AGG. So yeah, that's been really nice. There's something else I want to talk about. We had a listener email with a question about the boycotts and is it an effective way of targeting a company? And
I read that with much interest.
Yeah, I did as well. And if you had asked me 6 months ago, I would have said no. But today I'm going to say yes, because I have been
had a couple examples, have you?
Absolutely blown away by the Bud Light thing, because I did not really think that that whole thing warranted the level of response that it got. But I understand the response. I really do. I just didn't think it would move the needle. But oh my gosh, was I wrong.
Can I relate it to a movie line?
Yeah, go ahead.
This whole thing that's been going on with the gendering and pronouns and all that, people are just fed up. And all of a sudden, they're mad as hell and they're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. And then with Target, I think that one hit home because it targeted the kids.
Exactly.
And people just do not want their kids involved in that. It's crazy, the responses, but I would have to say, yes, it's very effective under the right circumstances.
Yeah. Did you see what Kid Rock did with the Bud Light?
Yeah.
It was typical Kid Rock, we'll put it that way.
I didn't know this, but at the golf tournament for the Joe that I've been talking about, they had a keg, and it was Bud Light. This was prior to the real backlash.
Right.
But my wife told me that there were four or five people that said they wouldn't drink it, and she had no idea why at that time. And then days later, she started seeing the story, and it kind of made sense to her. But it was like, wow! I mean, wow! What a response! That's really incredible.
Yeah. Generally speaking, I've never been a big fan of the boycott, and it's just, I'll relate this to my real life. Way back when the W. Bush administration. Remember when the Dixie Chicks were a hot item and the music was great and everybody loved everybody back then, until they went over to England and started trashing George W. Bush on a stage in England. And at that point, I cut him out of all the music selections we had playing over the house for many, many months. And really nothing changed much in my life or theirs. And I said, if I cut out every single person whose music I like, I'll be humming my own tune.
For sure. Because
you don't like many of them at all. So I put it back in, everything's fine. And I kind of feel that way about most boycotts. There aren't that many things I care about that much. But another point that was made in the email you're talking about, what about divorcing ourselves from China? Is there a way to do it? Well, we've talked about this once or twice. China's considered in the emerging markets category, and Adam has an exchange-traded fund for emerging markets that includes everybody, but he also has one that excludes China. So if you want to do something that's an overt gesture, and yet it's not going to hurt your own chances for success in the market, that's a good place to put a little bit of your money. My concern overall about doing things like boycotting a country or whatever, or the ESG things, if it affects your return and we're a fiduciary on your account, we can't really tell you that that's a great idea, because our job is to maximize your returns in your accounts. So there's a lot of sides to every story, and this one in particular is kind of an interesting one. But you're never going to get rid of China, as Elon Musk showed us this week by going over there and getting wined and dined and treated well, because it's 22% of his sales.
Second largest customer.
Yep. All right, we'll be right back after a short break. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And I remind everybody that the trivia question is out there. How many times better did Berkshire Hathaway perform than the U.S. broad stock market since 1965? And we're going to go to the phones, and maybe somebody will answer this. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show as usual.
Thanks so much. What's on your mind?
I just want to share with you the good week I had. Tuesday morning, I got to see one of Jim Cramer's favorite stocks, Salesforce.
Yay!
The symbol CRM get creamed.
And cream got cream.
Pun intended.
I figured that.
Anytime one of his stocks gets clobbered, it's a good day for me.
Yeah, I take my advice from entertainers all the time. How about you?
Yes. And I think maybe you should have that as next week's trivia question. How much has he outperformed the S&P?
I think he's actively suppressing that information.
If it's not a red number, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, you and me. Funny.
So, and he also dished one of the stocks I owned, which was up probably about 20% on the year, probably went up another 4% this week. So I was real happy to hear that. Anytime he badmouths one of my stocks, that's a good thing.
Yeah, double down.
But anyway, I'll let you guys get back to your show. I was going to take a shot and say
sure.
15.
15 times is low.
Yeah. It's low?
Yep.
Holy cow.
Stay tuned to the end. You're going to like this answer.
Oh, my gosh.
I appreciate the call. Thanks.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks. Thank you.
And now we're going to hear from Lane, who has a very special topic today. Good morning, sir.
There you go. Good morning.
How's things out west?
I'm sorry?
Say, how's things out west?
Excellent, excellent. Another stunning day. Destin, of course, is the fishing capital of the world, so they're having, I believe, the snapper tournament or one of those anyway. So
oh, nice.
Good
very
all
nice.
Around.
Yeah, you
and,
got it. All right. Well,
I got a quick Berkshire Hathaway story for you. I've told
great.
This to Adam before.
Okay.
You know, I started trading back in college in the 60s, and I said, you know, that old curmudgeon, he's not going to last 5 years. I'm not going to buy that stock. And, you know, I forget what it was, what, 1,000 or something like that. And, you know, I repeated that every 10 years, you know, that guy's old, this yeah. isn't going to last. So what we should have, could have, would have, right?
Yep.
No, I owned it once and sold it when it doubled, and that was a long time ago, and it was not my best trade getting rid of that.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, I told Adam I'd call back in a couple of weeks ago, you all talked about elder care and, you know, how to provide for your loved ones or, you know, many of us, Pat and I included, are having to start making decisions about our care.
Yeah, everybody is.
And a couple of points. First of all, I want to say, in all our dealings with the state, we took care of two sets of parents in their elder years. And in all of our dealings, everything was transparent and above board. You know, all I'm going to talk about is ways to legitimately and legally and openly save your loved one's money. Because my point to Adam was, as you all know, I'm cheap.
And, frugal. Only a Dutchman can be cheap.
Thrifty.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. you know, I try to do things myself. So when my wife's mom started getting in the situation where she was going to need some financial help, we started taking up, people suggested we, you know, look at the Medicaid laws. And so we started doing that, and we did it on our own. We looked it up. You can look up the statute online, and there are many websites that help you through this. And basically, it, to my interpretation, it said, well, if you don't have any money, give what little you have to the state and commit your income to the state, and then we'll help you out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's pretty drastic.
Yes, it
is. And I'm asking people to think about caring for somebody. You know, you need supplies, just the basic dignity of buying clothes for a loved one. That takes more money than we saw that would be available to her in the law. So along our journey, we wound up talking to an elder care attorney. And attorneys have high hourly rates. And, you know, in some cases like this, they may have a program with a fixed cost, but, you know, they look expensive. But the bottom line is we hired a wonderful lady down in Kissimmee, Florida, and she really set my mother-in-law up for a very dignified retirement in a long-term care facility.
So,
you know, the Medicaid program is for low-income people of any age.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I want to make a quick mention about that, any age. We're here this morning talking about old people, but I can tell you most likely in St. Catharines there in Jacksonville is still a fabulous resident who is a very young mother, got bitten by a mosquito, got encephalitis, and can no longer care for herself.
Yeah.
So this is a person that's going to be on Medicaid her entire life, her entire adult life. So when they say of any age, that's why. So, and these are long-term strategies, by the way. My wife took care of her mother for over 20 years. So when I obsess over saving money, that's the reason. You've got to plan this for long-term.
No doubt.
So,
Lane, how much did the attorney, would you estimate that it costs? And then I guess the strategy was still in place for throughout those 20 years, if I'm understanding it correctly, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So how much did that cost you? And this was quite a while ago, so it's probably gone up.
You can bet it's gone up. I want to say,
just
it was
a ballpark.
Several thousands of dollars.
Okay.
I think it was less than $10,000.
Okay.
It's, you know, when we, well, so we spent the money. It was a lot of money. And like you say, back in those days, you know, think about it.
Yeah. That's...
It was, you know, it hurts to think of that amount of money today.
Sure.
So, he helped set us up, and you you mentioned during your discussion the other day, I think the look-back period is 5 years.
That's right.
Right.
So the state is going to want to see all your records, all your financial records, all of it, for at least 5 years, and things like selling a home or giving your money away. Now, when you say you can't give the money to your family, well, you can't do it unless it's within the state guidelines.
Right.
So the answer isn't that you can't do any. The answer is you got to do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually turns out we loved the program. It gave her a lot of dignity. And the bottom line is she saved us way more than she cost us.
That's great,
and
especially if you amortize that over 20 plus years of her life. I mean, that on an annualized basis.
You have $500?
Yeah, it's really nothing.
Yeah. And you really feel good. I mean, if you're having to transition a loved one or plan for your own long-term care, it's stressful. I mean, you're uprooting your lifestyle. You know, all of that goes into it. So, and then you're dealing with a state agency. And, you know, state agencies or state employees are great people, but the state never has enough of them, and they never, you know, provide for somebody holding your hand through the state bureaucracy.
I agree with
that. And when you walk in, what this particular attorney did for us is she said, she had us bring in all the records. She said, you put this in a notebook and you break it down so that the state can look quickly and easily and determine if you qualify. And when we walked in with that book, the lady said, you know, this is fantastic. You had a great attorney. And that took all the stress out of it right there.
Nice.
Excellent. It's really a difficult thing, especially since the cost of long-term care insurance is so dramatic. Most people truly do not have it or do not have enough of it. And it's not something you can say, instead of that, do this. But talking to an elder care attorney can't hurt much. I've had to do it on behalf of a couple of clients. I was very happy with what I heard. So I guess there's a little lesson to be learned here, huh?
Thanks for the story, Lane. We appreciate it. And we certainly recommend, if you find yourself in that situation, consulting with an elder care attorney, because you can get yourself in a lot of trouble by trying to skirt the rules.
Okay, more when we get back. Hang on the line, please. If you're there, this is the Vanway Financial Hour.
American-electrical.com.
Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And without hesitation, Mike, thanks for holding.
Okay.
What's happening?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
What a good week in the market.
It's a relief.
Yeah, I'm not exactly thrilled with the compromise, although I guess a compromise is better than nothing. But some people are saying this will actually add $4 trillion
to
the budget. Yeah.
Not, it won't add it to the budget. It'll add it to the debt.
They hadn't done it? Right. How much? I think you have to look at what was saved, because you know that this current administration is not afraid to rack up some debt.
That's correct.
And if you look at the...
I'm still trying to wrap myself around the whole purpose of the debt ceiling, but I'll leave that for another time.
It's to make a good fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a venture at the question.
Shoot.
The trivia question.
Sure.
And I believe I saw something that said that Buffett has beaten the S&P 500 39 out of 58 years.
That's probably true.
And as far as percentage, as far as...
just how many times better? And we know that 15 times is low. So it's he's beaten the market by some number of times greater than 15.
Yeah, I understand that. I think it's quite a lot. If I'm looking at percentages, I'm going to say 152 times.
No kidding. You're way close. It's actually 153 times, and I had a plus or minus one on it. So you are the winner.
Okay. All right. Well, I can't take full credit. I got to thank. I get a subscription to Motley Fool. I'm sure you've heard of Motley Fool.
Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I saw some stats in Motley Fool that says, had you invested $10,000 in the S&P 500, you would have about $2.4 million today.
Mm-hmm.
But you would have done quite better with Buffett.
Yep, yeah, that is true.
Now, you want to hear the real interesting number in this whole story.
Absolutely.
If you convert that into what percentage is returned between 65 and now, it's 3,787,464%.
That's pretty good.
Amazing.
That's Isn't that something? Good. You know, if you had invested that $10,000 in Berkshire Hathaway back then, you'd be, you know, Warren Buffett.
Pretty wealthy.
Correct.
Love it. Correct. Well, I'm glad some people are out there paying attention to these things.
Right. You know, I know
there's a lesson in there, but it took place in the past.
Yeah, just a very quick comment about my friend that we talk about, Mr. Kramer.
Yeah.
He's a very smart man. I don't want to slight him because he's living in Brooklyn now. But there's somebody that actually has a fund. He made a fund that bets against you.
Yes,
I saw that.
I've seen that. That's hysterical. I should look one of these days how they've done. Okay, well, I'm going to put you on hold.
Yeah, thanks again for a great show. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. All right, we'll take that. And meanwhile, good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Yeah, I was calling in to find out if you guys have... Being that you're so knowledgeable, whether you have any remedies for black spots, rust, and mold on my roses.
I do not.
Yeah, get a better gardener.
No, hey, a couple things. One, I don't know if you guys remember this. Several years ago, 60 Minutes did a feature on Warren Buffett. And as you and your listeners know, he's from Omaha, Nebraska,
right.
And which is where he still lives. And at one time, I don't know if the statistic is still accurate or not, but there was more millionaires per capita in Omaha than there was anywhere else in the country. And I thought that was an interesting fact because most of the people that invested in Berkshire Hathaway were from his hometown, and they benefited the best.
Right.
And it was quite interesting because I had an opportunity while my daughter was going to college there to go by his house, and it's a very nondescript kind of home, no guards on the corner.
Right.
I think he had one BMW and one Toyota Camry in the driveway, and that was the extent of his, you know, his wealth, at least visible from the sidewalk.
Well, if you want to do something interesting, Google his home in California.
The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was something you guys were talking about earlier, which was about China. And I'm of a different opinion. I listened to a gentleman by the name of Admiral Stavridis, and you guys probably know of him or have heard of him. Quite informed individual, head of European Command for some time. I mean, a gentleman with a lot of knowledge about the world. And he said something that basically we have armed China. You know, by our continually purchasing, by our continual investments in the country, and it is now slowly, the dragon is slowly turning around, that's going to bite the hand that's been feeding them for all these years, because they feel they can. And based on their 100-year plan, they are going to attempt to rule the world. Well, what is that, what is going on and what does that mean? Well, what's going on is we continually invest in the country. I get it. Elon Musk was over there. Jamie Dimon was over there. And, of course, they're going to treat him with as royalty. But is that really a good thing? And I think that our country has got to come to terms with this before we do end up in a World War III. And that is we have to start moving industry or persuading American industry and all industry that there's other places to do business than in China. And if we can start hitting them in their pocketbook, maybe they will hesitate and think twice, especially after we've seen what's gone on in Ukraine and Russia. We know that these countries that are bullied by these larger nuclear capable countries don't necessarily roll over and just play dead. They fight, and they fight like hell. So yeah. I think I know there's funds out there, and Americans can do as they please. But man, I really want them to think twice about that. There's plenty of places in the world to put your money to get a decent return. And if China's in a fund or a stock or something like that, go somewhere else. Yeah, that's my two cents.
I have absolutely no problem with people doing that. As you're saying, we had a great start in pulling back from China under Trump. And then, of course, the day the election happened, the lights went out on that program. And I can't remember what the name of it was, but it had to do with China. And Biden just canceled it like he canceled everything else Trump did. And now people are either not pulling out or going deeper into China, with some exceptions. Well, but the things we have to do are those things that are critical to our national security, like medicines.
There's also a difference between manufacturing in China and
right.
selling China Teslas.
Yep.
I mean, if I'm a business and Chinese consumers want to buy my car, I'm going to sell it to them. There's no doubt about it.
And then bring the profit back home.
Exactly.
And you help the balance
of payments.
That's
the opposite of what's been happening yep. over the last 40 years, mm-hmm. where we've been outsourcing everything to China. So I think there's two different things going on there. One is good, one is bad. But the net effect has been that China is seeing manufacturers pull out, and that's why Mexico is stock market is up 22% yep. this year. For one of the reasons is that a lot of manufacturing is relocating to other countries. You're seeing it go to Vietnam. You're seeing
India
it go to India.
Yeah, big recipient.
All over Southeast Asia, Mexico. I think it is happening. It's of course not going to happen as quickly as we would like. That is not something you can just accomplish overnight. But I do think American consumers are waking up to that fact.
And even Apple is reducing its China exposure and going to places
like India. Yeah, I read that
India.
About Apple as well, that they're looking, I think, to Vietnam.
Vietnam's a big recipient.
To start. So, I mean, we need to somehow incentivize these manufacturers to go elsewhere. I think that's the only... If we can get their economy to drop to the point where it starts, where the Chinese citizens start becoming a little bit more responsive to the lack of you know, monies coming into their pockets and getting them restless, and I think that would worry the government a lot. I mean, there's what, 3 billion people with.
Yeah.
All right, you guys have a good weekend.
Thanks for the
Thanks
call, Greg.
So much, Greg.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, one of very many things that we can all pretty much agree on is that we're too big over there and not big enough here.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it just reversed course very suddenly. We need to consider the stance of the people we're going to vote for next time when it comes to moving things out of China. But, you know, it just very difficult for some people to break their old habits. We have to try it. Anyway, we're going to get out of here, and I'm going to try to take my time machine back to 1965 and put a couple grand in Berkshire Hathaway.
No,
I'll let you know next week if that worked out for me. Interesting day, a good week. Hopefully we keep it up and we get into a new bull market. We'll see you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.